You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Another one.
This is a throwdown, a showdown. Hell no, I can't slow down. It's gonna go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bruh. Bruh.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. It is Thursday, April 21st at 8.02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we are live right now on godfathersofpodcasting.com. And in case y'all didn't know, we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. As always, archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider like Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, and tons more. You can get us on your favorite smart device like Alexa, Google, your damn telephone, your car, whatever you want. Video archives are exclusively available on our site, godfathersofpodcasting.com. And speaking of our website, did you know we have really cool merch? Seriously, we got hoodies, t-shirts, tanks, pajamas, hats, cell phone cases, any shit we could slap our logo on, we got it. If you like us, buy some merch. And if you hate us, buy some merch and set it on fire. That'll teach us for sucking. You can interact with us right now. Send us a text message or hit us up on WhatsApp. The number is on the screen. 437-375-2000. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Donnie Da Silva, and I am joined this week by the Simon to my Garfunkel, the Ernie to my Bert, the Mario to my Luigi. This is my pal and co-host, the one and only Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell.
Mario to Luigi.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, at least
that's
it wasn't
the one
like
that
a...
got... That's the one that got you hot?
Like a, well, you know, I've been watching Sopranos, so at least it wasn't like a Fredo joke or, you know, something like that lately, right? So Mario to Luigi. All right, that's cool. I'll take it. Donnie, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. And before people ask, conspicuous by his absence, our bro Danio, the third godfather of podcasting. Once again, he is away. We mentioned last week what was going on. He had COVID a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And as a result of getting COVID, he needed some time to catch up on things, his childcare schedule with his little girl, some personal stuff. He's also been talking a lot online lately about the fact that he's been doing some acting classes.
Yeah.
He's been a busy man. So Dan, not here this week. We're going to miss him once again, because it's never the same when your bro Danny O is not in the house, but, we're hoping to have him back real soon.
Scheduling conflicts will happen.
I mean, what are you going to do? We're all busy dudes.
Exactly.
You know, that's it. That's it. There's no controversy. That's it. So, to answer your question, I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Good. I mean, it was a week.
You know, it's been a week. Let me tell you.
It's been a crazy, crazy week. And yeah. I would be remissed without saying that this year, this past week, the 19th, as it were, the year was 2007. The time was approximately 2:30 in the afternoon. It was about 20 degrees outside. It was sunny, not even a windy day, slight breeze. That was the day that my entire world changed, so to speak, when I broke my leg. That was 15 years ago this week.
Holy shit.
So that's been crazy. Yeah.
That was 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. 2007. Wow. Unbelievable. Right. So shout out to my leg.
How is that leg doing?
I mean, it's still attached. Some days it's a good thing. Some days I don't know, but it is still attached.
Some days you're ready to rip it off, eh?
Yeah. Usually those winter days, you know, those winter months. But I mean, I don't know if that's a hit or a shit for this week. You know, the reminiscing down memory lane, so to speak. Because you know, it makes you realize when you have an accident such as the one that I had, where just to those who remind you that have not heard the story very quickly.
Yeah,
I broke my tibia. I broke my tibia and fibula on my left leg. The front muscle was hanging out the front. Both bones were shattered through the front of my leg. My foot was pointed in a different direction. I had a rod in my leg. I had about 3,000 pounds worth of steel come down, hit me in the chest, and land on my leg. So, yeah, it was crazy times in 2007. I got married a year later.
I remember that. And if that accident didn't happen to somebody that had a chest the size of the Titanic, they would have been killed on impact.
I would like to think that that wouldn't happen to anybody, but unfortunately, yeah,
that's the reality.
It's safe to say that it could have been a heck of a lot worse. And yeah, it was weird. People don't think that, like, you know, PTSD is a real thing sometimes, even to this day, 15 years later. You know what I mean? When I watch some accident things on TV or something like that happen,
right,
just kind of,
right,
makes a little something click in your head, and you're just kind of like, oh, I don't feel so good all of a sudden. So,
yeah, I got you.
Shout out to 2007. Fuck you.
I remember when I spoke to you right after that accident, I'm like, dude, yeah, what happened? And you said, you know how your foot's supposed to point forward? Yeah. Well, mine isn't.
Yeah, no. No, I could see the bottom of my foot looking right up at me.
Oh,
and so, yeah, those of you who want to check it out, you can go to my Facebook page. You can find it on there. There is an album inside of there. Look through the photos. You can see the pictures. You can see the bones. You can see the pin that's in there. Yeah, I made an album. It's on there. It's public viewing.
I have never looked at that, and I don't want to. I love you, but I don't want to.
Tremendous.
Was it not that same injury where you got the staph infection?
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
yes, that it was after killed you. It was after I got the rod taken out, because the rod was causing a problem in my knee. It was fusing with the bone, and they took it out. 45-minute surgery turned into 4.5 hours to get the rod out. And then after that, I ended up with a staph infection inside where my knee basically blew up on me. And it's been a tough go. That's why I say some days it's good to have a leg. Some days, you know, it'd be kind of cool to have one of those robot ones, right? Or a shotgun or a chainsaw. Or an interchangeable one. I could get like a weed whacker. It'd be great in the summertime. We're just going to shove it all back in there.
I was going to say... one of the things I was going to mention this week, and then I thought, nah, forget it. Who cares? But then now you just brought up a reason for me to mention it again. My favorite video game franchise of all time. You know me, I'm not a big gamer, but every now and then I like to sit down with something that's fun and whatever. I love the Saints Row franchise. Just because our buddy Kish is one of the featured voice artists all over that franchise, but because it's like Grand Theft Auto with fun. It's so ludicrous and so ridiculous. The storylines are stupid. You beat guys up with a 9-foot dildo. Like, the game is just ridiculously fun. And they have a new game coming out, a new version coming out August 23rd. And I saw some snapshots, and they were talking about some of the customizations you can do on your characters that you build and go and run the streets with. And one of the new customizations is you can have custom prosthetic limbs. So I'm thinking,
right,
it's perfect for you.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I mean, I was ever since the Grindhouse movies, you know what I mean? Like, why not?
Yeah, so that's your hit, right? Or shit?
Well,
or
no, I mean, that was just kind of a thing. I mean, hit.
It's a hit that you're week. Still here.
Listen, so let's talk about
that. Alive.
So that was on the 19th. That was on the 19th. And then fast forward to this year to the 20th. 420, the epic stoner year.
It was yesterday.
You know what I mean? It's one of those days, right? And on 420, the Missouri State Troopers ended up getting a call to an accident, a three-car accident on the highway. When they get there, they find 500 pounds of pot spread out across the road. On 420, in a place called Missouri, I mean, this couldn't write anything better. It's fantastic. So that's a hit.
I thought you were going to say that's your shit because you weren't there to pick up the scraps.
Listen, no, that's
would you pick up road pot if you were there? Would you take road pot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what? But can you clean road pot? Like, is it have a 5-6?
Sure, it was all still in bags. It wasn't like
tumbleweeds.
Yeah, it wasn't like they just filled up a back of a dump truck. They're driving down the highway, and all of a sudden they ran over a football player. Well, it wasn't anything like that.
I'm just picturing like a Harold and Kumar sized 6-foot tall bag of weed just tumbling down the highway.
Oh my goodness. No, I'm nothing so like ridiculous. That. I'm sure they would have all right, much that's, better packaging.
There you that's go. Your hit. What's your shit?
Listen, the shit has got to be this ridiculous display of mental health breakdown that is this travesty of a trial between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. This thing is a shit show extraordinaire. And literally to some point, like Amber Heard or Amber Turd, as people are calling her, literally shit on his pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is insanity what is going on. And the thing that
that's never been your kink, right? That's never been your kink, shitting on a pillow. No,
not a fecal freak, not a Cleveland steamer, a glass table. No, none of that kind of stuff at all.
What about a little urination where you sleep? You cool with that? Mark your territory.
I mean, it happens sometimes when I'm you know in bed.
What's going on there? You just got fined for having your phone go off during the show.
Yeah, apparently. That's crazy. People trying to call me while I'm on the air on my phone. And
you,
I guess
you need to do you need to message. Take that? That could be good radio. No. Do you need to take that?
No, absolutely not. But none of those things have ever been my kink. You know what I mean? I'm not into water sports. I'm not into body defecation stuff. But you know, outside of that, we can have some fun. That's been my thing though, is that this thing has been just such a shit show of a display of a breakdown of a relationship put out there in the public. If this was anybody else, it wouldn't get this kind of notoriety. But the fact that people are just glued to this is a sad display, no matter which way this turns out for both of these guys. And I wish the world could be better about themselves.
We talked a few weeks ago about how Will Smith's career will never recover. Johnny Depp has always been beyond A-list, right? He's been platinum level A-list. Yeah. This is going to hurt him irreparably, permanently.
Who's the top guys on that list? Him, Clooney, probably. You know what I mean? Now, The Rock.
Highest paid guy in Hollywood, and has been for a while.
These are
Robert Downey Jr. Like the cream of the crop. Yeah,
the guys that have their own private underground entrances at the airport.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, it's never going to be the same for him. Absolutely. You know. So, wow. All the best to both of them.
All right. Let me share with you my hit.
All right.
And this is going to be something a little different, but I want to share this with the audience out there. It's a little different for me, but let's put it this way. On Tuesday this week, I had the opportunity at a corporate event to hear a keynote address from a man named Neil Pasricha. And for those Junior? Who are not, for those who are not familiar, you may be familiar with his work. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He wrote The Book of Awesome. And in addition to The Book of Awesome, he has The Book of Even More Awesome. I think that's what it's called. And he also wrote The Happiness Equation. He's written a bunch of stuff. And when you talk about Canadian authors that sell millions and millions of copies, it doesn't happen very often. Like, almost never, you know, New York Times bestseller, not like bestseller in Canada, like really one of the best-selling authors on the planet. This dude, I listened to him speak for an hour. One of the most engaging, entertaining keynote speeches I've ever had the pleasure of taking in. And a big part of what he focused on was working on your own mental health. And he talked about understanding the importance of truly owning what makes you happy and truly being happy. And it sounds so simple, but he talked about the fact that he was raised by, you know, Indian parents with Indian ideologies. And he said, you know, when he was a kid, he got this mantra that probably you got and that I got from my parents that were not Indian. And we all heard the same type of thing when we were kids. And a lot of people heard this was, hey, you want to be happy when you get older? Okay. You work hard. Then you'll be successful at work and then you'll be happy. You'll make money. You'll be happy. That's how you do it. But he talks about how all the research doesn't support that logic, right? Because when you're working hard and chasing that never reachable carrot, you're really just working hard enough. You're really just working enough to hold on to your job. You're not really motivated to accelerate. The key is to invert that equation, right? And you have to start off by being happy. Because when you're happy, the research shows you're actually going to be about 400% more productive when you go to work, right? If you're more productive when you go to work, what's the next thing that happens? You're going to be good at your job. You're probably going to be successful. You might get promoted. You might make more money. But you're not going to be happy at the end because you made more money, right? You know the old saying, more money, more problems. You got more money, you're just going to have more bills. You're going to have more other things. So the happiness has to come from within. The happiness has to be your own self-discovery. And he talked a lot about how to do that and how to get there. And I could spend this entire podcast rehashing what he talked about. But I want to throw out a free plug. You know, I did invite him to come on the show and he politely declined, said he's really burnt out right now, but he would like to join us at some point in the near future. But I want to throw out a plug, you know, his book, The Happiness Equation, or even The Book of Awesome. If you've never read either, please go check them out. I'm going to link them on the Godfathers of Podcasting.com. I'm reading both right now. And I know it sounds silly to say that a book is doing this, but I'm feeling a mindset shift. You know, I'm feeling this constant mindset shift. And it's like stuff that pisses you off, stuff that's bringing you down. Let that shit go. It doesn't really matter. Let that shit go. Focus on the things that do matter and focus on what's going to make you happy. You know, and it may not be the things you think make you happy. So one of the things that makes me happy is this fucking show.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, we're all going to die.
Oh, there you go. Way to nosedive my happy. Mario.
You're there a it dick. Is. Oh, wow. Sounds like the key to happy is selling a million plus books.
I mean, that doesn't hurt, you know? All right. My shit of the week. Yeah. And I almost debated making this a hit, but because I was so excited about the experience I had with Neil, I wanted to give him some love. My shit of the week is the New York Yankees and how they absolutely lean in to being the bad guys of Major League Baseball. For those of you that don't know the story, let me share. Earlier Please. Today, Thursday, April 21st, a man who plays baseball for the Detroit Tigers, Miguel Cabrera. I mean, to those of you that don't follow baseball, probably not a household name. For those that are baseball diehards, one of the best hitters in the last few generations, right? Plays for the Detroit Tigers. He was trying today to become the 33rd person in the history of baseball to get to that unbelievable milestone of 3,000 career hits. He's sitting on 2,999. Well, in the game, I think he flied out. He lined out, didn't get a hit. So he's got one more at bat in the eighth inning. There's two outs. There's nobody on base. The Tigers are winning 3-0. They go on to win the game, right? So really, there's no reason for the Yankees to do anything other than just say, all right, let's just throw our best shit and see what we can do with this guy. The Yankees manager, Aaron Boone, says, fuck him. And they intentionally walk him. these fucking heels. They're like, you're going to get your 3,000th hit,
but not, just on, not us. On us. Yeah, we're not going to be the other end of that equation in those record books.
We're and not going that to is, Almanac
that's, for that. That is, one. That is a straight up New York thing to do.
Bunch right? of dicks.
That's hilarious. Like, dude, think about it. I mean, original outfits are like black and white stripe robbers costumes. Like, these are the Yankees, man. So...
I couldn't believe when I saw this. Like, I've got the game. I'm at work. I've got the game in my ear, and I'm listening to it. And I'm like, they're fucking walking him. What a bunch of assholes.
That's the hilarious. Crowd is hot.
You know, they're in Detroit. The crowd is going bananas. Like, what are you doing? The game's over. What do? They hop on the next thing smoking. Get the fuck out of Detroit. See you later, bitches.
Yeah.
Not our problem.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't do that?
Bunch of get the hell out of Detroit, of course. But man, you talk about leaning into the fact that they are truly the evil empire of professional sports. They don't give a shit. We do have our guest sitting backstage, and we're going to get to him momentarily, but before we do, I wanted to throw this out there too. I wanted to get your take on this, Ted, because I saw this story from a few days ago. Mike Tyson. Iron Mike Tyson was on a JetBlue flight going out of San Francisco. Apparently, the guy sitting behind him was super intoxicated and was talking Mike's ear off the whole time. And Mike apparently just kept saying, "Hey, man, I'm just trying to get some sleep." You know?
What'd he do?
Hey, man, it's trying to get... he wanted a break. I get it. Like, I'm like that too, dude, and I'm not Mike Tyson. If I'm on a flight and you start chatting me up and I don't know you, I want to do what Mike did, but I don't. Mike got up, turned around, and beat the fuck out of this guy. He absolutely dummied him. And I know everyone has probably had moments in their life where they would like to do that to that annoying stranger in public, but we don't because we're not crazy. What's this going to, we talk about the impact of recent actions for Will Smith. We talk about the impact of recent actions for Johnny Depp. What's this going to do to Mike's profile, if anything?
To his profile?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. Public
perception.
Absolutely nothing.
He's been working hard to rehabilitate himself.
And he'll be fine after this. There's video of this dude like just like badgering this dude over the seat, everything like that. Mike Loss is cool. There's no doubt about it. Is it gonna hurt his bank book? Yeah, a little bit. He's gonna have to pay a little something to somebody, you know what I'm saying? He's gonna probably have to give up a couple of bags of those, you know, Holyfield ears gummies that he's got from his cannabis company. I don't know if you heard about this or not, right? They're gummies in the shape of an ear with a bite taken out of them.
He actually sells that?
Yeah.
He's a genius.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. He's a genius. Like, this is not going to hurt his public perception.
That's incredible.
Except for if you didn't like Mike Tyson to begin with.
Right. Those that don't like him are just going to pile on at this point.
Yeah. Oh, look, he's a woman beater and a rapist. Apparently some people just hold on to those things forever.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because I've known you a long, long time.
Sure.
I've known you since you were a young man with a fuse as short as Mike's. Mm-hmm. What would it take for you today to turn around and wail on a guy? Like, you're on a flight. Would you have to be kicking your seat? Would you have to be shit talking your family? What would it take for you to say, "All right, I'll catch a case"?
He'd have to be over 18.
Okay.
And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it.
Would he have to strike you first?
Because if I am flying coach on JetBlue, I'm already pissed off at the world.
Yeah, what was Mike doing in coach?
To begin with, I am
this is dubious vexed. To start. Why was Mike in coach?
You know what I'm saying?
I don't fucking fly coach.
Well, I mean, he's got leg room. That's
true.
The difference.
Mike's 5'8".
He can do that, right? You and I cannot on JetBlue. So yeah, no, I listen. I also, every time, there've been plenty of times. Here's the first thing you have to say to yourself. How much money do you have in the bank?
Right. If you've got,
because if you've got enough, then
take a poke.
Yep. Bob, Bob, a loop, a wop, bam, boom.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is Tid has gone soft. This is what I'm hearing.
Broke. Not soft, because I will still slap a motherfucker out.
Well, this is what I'm trying to get the bottom of. What would it take for you to be the guy that turns around? If he poked you first, is that okay? Now it's on, or would you eat that punch like a big wimp?
A punch?
To the back of the head.
No, a punch is getting him thrown out the door.
Off a moving plane?
Yeah, like 100%. You punch me on an airplane? Yeah, like you are spending the rest of your fucking trip somewhere over a cloud. 100%. Like if you just want to chirp and go back and forth, okay. Don't get upset when I eat you up. As soon as it becomes physical, then all bets are off. Like you can't get physical like that, right?
You know? But these days, what you're saying is somebody could chirp you as much as they want, and they're not going to get a rise out of you.
No, okay. No. Words don't. Who gives a fuck?
There was a time. I'm just saying, Tid. There was a time.
Yeah, I think that when you're younger, and that time though is more because, like, you just want to. And as you get older, you find out whether or not you need to. And if you don't need to, then what's the point? Because you got all the want to out of your system. And if you didn't, well, then you're going to go to jail.
I have a cousin that used to every now and then come to the bar that Tid and I worked at way back in the day. And this guy used to he was a big 6'4" hockey player, loved to fight, just loved a good scrap. He would go to the bar with the intention of drinking lots of alcohol and finding a fight. And now this guy's like, 50. And I ask him, I'm like, so you getting a tilly every now and then? He's like, listen, I've got about one fight left in me. And when my kid starts bringing home boys, it's on. I'm like, okay, you've got your priorities set.
Yeah.
He's got one fight left in him, and he's going to make it count.
100%.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now for us to welcome our featured guest of the evening. So let's go ahead and bring him in. He's making his second appearance on the program, and he's a friend of the show and someone that we enjoy having on. He's a stand-up comic with well over 20 years of experience. He's performed all over North America and abroad, and he picks up rave reviews virtually everywhere he goes. He's been dubbed the king of crowd work. With good reason. He's an improv master that often gets his best material from just fucking with people in completely unplanned bits. You can hear him featured regularly in various comedy channels on SiriusXM. He's on Spotify. Personally, I love staying on top of his social media posts because they're hysterical, and he gives a lot of good shit away for free. Ladies and gentlemen, the human fireworks display. This is Jeff Leeson.
Wow, that was quite an introduction.
Oh, I appreciate that. Normally the intros are really over the top. I felt like I was shortchanging you because I was running late tonight.
No, I usually get, and here's the guy. They don't even remember. They don't even know my fucking name. They just go, here's the guy we asked to be here.
Has that literally happened, or what is the worst that somebody has butchered your name? Like, it's pretty easy.
The name?
It's Jeff Leeson.
Yeah.
Right? What's the worst lesson you've gotten?
Lesson.
It's not even the worst. It's just the most often is lesson.
Wow.
I would wager money that Jeff Leeson has been featured in more promotional material than Jeff Leeson. I've never kept track, and now I'm thinking about it. I should have, but I would wager the amount of times I've driven up to a venue and on the marquee, comedian Jeff Leeson is remarkable.
Have you thought about just doing an AKA, like the whole thing, Jeff Leeson, AKA Jeff Leeson?
Or just change it. Just give in.
That's what I was just going to say. I've thought about that a lot.
But if you change it, then they're going to just go to Leeson.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Can't win. Yeah,
hey, that's a good point. You know what? You might be onto something. Maybe I'm going to start telling them it's Lesson, so they put Leeson, and then I can perform as Leeson, but business-wise, I'm Lesson.
And that's the lesson.
I think we. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, we just solved your career.
Yeah, this has already improved my life dramatically here. This is a big night.
I wanted to ask you, since you talked about the introduction, Tid, as well as our other regular co-host Dan, who's not here this week, they tell me all the time, like, I don't listen to fucking podcasts, you know? And I'm like, guys, we host a podcast. You should listen to other podcasts, you know? Like, comedians watch other comedians. You should fucking listen to other podcasts. I do.
Sure.
Like, I try to listen to podcasts whenever I have time. One of my biggest fucking pet peeves.
Oh, wow. I thought I was being played
off.
Is
that you again, Tid? That's twice in one show?
Yeah, man. I'm busy tonight, apparently.
Never has your phone gone off in 25 years, and now twice in one show. Holy shit. You're fine.
My ringer's down. I should have grabbed that one. That was like an 800 number. It just said United States 800.
Yeah, take that on the air. So one of my biggest pet peeves, man, when I listen to shows is they'll have a guy on. You know, it would be something like this, like, all right, welcome to the show, Jeff. So, Jeff, sorry, what's your last name?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So,
tell us, what do you do?
So often.
Like, what
tell
is
us
that?
A bit about yourself, Jeff.
Yeah, tell us about you. What do you do?
There's been so many, like, morning and afternoon DJs in like, towns you go to and you have to do morning radio. Right. And they interview a new comedian every week, so they don't give a shit what your name is. And that's exactly the introduction. Tell us about yourself.
It's like, and listen.
Tell us a joke.
Have you gone through and just got to the point where you're like, I'm just going to make some shit up just to see if they're paying attention?
You know, I'm a giraffe gynecologist.
Somebody asked, I got in trouble from my mother for this because somebody asked me in an interview one time, right? And I said to them, they were like, how did you get started in wrestling? And it's always the stupidest questions that they ask you just because they don't know any better, right? And I was like, well, I was forced into it because I had three kids that I had to pay for. Blah, blah, blah. I just went on this big, long fucking rant about this whole thing. And my mother gets a hold of me. She's like, what in the holy fuck are you telling people? And I'm like, mom, it's pro wrestling. It's a work. Who gives a shit?
I love that.
Fuck these guys. I'm like, that's what you got to do. Get to the point where you can just start making stuff up.
You know what we did one time? Because we were on this tour and we were in some place in Winnipeg. In Manitoba, not Winnipeg, and like a small town. And we were doing their radio because their radio station was like a local sponsor. And we went in and it was not the regular morning guy. It was like this kid, like this teenage kid who was like the intern, and he got a hold of the morning show. So we had my buddy Tig, who does like opens for me a lot. He brought a beer at like 5 a.m. and cracked it on the radio. And just like sat there drinking while I sort of answered questions. And the kid was so rattled by the beer, but it sold out our show.
That's amazing.
The town was so like excited that he drank a beer on the air at 5 a.m. that they wanted to come and see what we were going to do.
I wanted to ask you this because again, my other pet peeve that I have, and Tid sort of alluded to it, in addition to the interviewer that does no preparation, doesn't know who the hell you are. The other one is the guys that ask the same three or four or five cliche questions in every friggin' interview, right? And I'm like, bro, if this is what you're going to do, why do you have a show? You're not bringing anything new to the internet, you know? Like, have a creative thought or leave it to someone who does. And like, we always try to pride ourselves on asking guys questions they've never been asked, you know, and trying to make it fun. So I've recently been getting some of this thrown back at me because over the last couple of weeks, I've been doing interviews where I've been the one getting interviewed on a bunch of different podcasts and whatever, because I'm doing a lot of promotion right now for this new wrestling company that I'm helping run. So I've been doing a lot of promotion and guys are asking me all the same fucking questions every single time. And it's so frustrating. And with some of these questions, this is what I wanted to ask you, Jeff. Do you ever find yourself sometimes when you get one of these cliche questions that comes up every time? Do you ever find yourself giving an answer and you're not even sure that answer is real anymore, but you've used it so many times that it's become your rubber stamp response to that stupid question? Because I'm finding myself doing it. And you do more interviews than I do.
Yeah, I'm trying to now I'm trying to think. I'm trying to go in my head here and think of, like, what do I hear? I mean, the one thing is, like, how did you start in comedy? Right. Same as how did you start in wrestling? And that story, so I guess maybe that story, because the real story is I started at 14 and my mom used to drive me to shows. So there have been times where I have sort of now at 36 look back and been like, did I start when I was like 24? and I thought I was 14 and I was just such a fucking loser that I lived at home and my mom had to drive me because I had no car? Or was I really a 14-year-old kid? Because, like, I don't remember being 14 and 24 and 30. Like, that could be. So, yeah, I never thought about it until right now. And certainly this is going to open up some therapy, I guess, for me. But, yeah, that one. That is the answer, because I have definitely had that fucking thought before.
I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good. I don't know, man. Like, I think about it, and like, you try to have fun with people, you know, if you're doing a lot of this stuff, and obviously for you going out and doing interviews, doing press, it's a necessary evil. Sometimes it's fun and sometimes it's a pain in the ass. But
is,
I mean,
it different this time around for you? Because last time we spoke was before, you know, it was COVID and you had all these dates lined up and you had to cancel a bunch of them. You know what I mean? And now we're starting to open back up again. You're getting across the border. Like, everything there is okay, I guess, right? Is it different this time around for you? Or are you just like, are you going to places where everybody's like, fuck it, we're in Alberta?
Yeah, I started. It would have been last year. I started going to the States as soon as I knew I could get across. And they were basically, first time we went, like a year and a half ago, it was like nothing happened. Everywhere we went was like, all right, did I just go to 2019? Right. Or like, what is this?
What pandemic?
And yeah, absolutely. No mask, no social distancing, no hand fucking sanitizer every two steps. No, nothing, just a bunch of people. And we were like, and they were so excited to be back to normal where they were that the audiences were unbelievable. And the reception was incredible because they were so excited to just be done with it. And so I really love that. So that's one thing I've noticed is people now, and especially as we get back to like 100% capacity and bigger shows and stuff, people seem really excited just to be able to go and do something and be around people and not feel like terrified all the time.
Better road sex?
What's that?
Better road sex now?
Better road sex?
Yeah. Like, is it better this time around? I'm assuming you got some before. I mean, are you getting better stuff this time around? Or maybe you're not getting any fucking road sex at all, Jeff.
No, only if my girlfriend travels with me. Mm. And then
that's the right answer.
I would then absolutely. And it's great everywhere. So, you know, road, car, hotel, like, it doesn't matter. But yeah, no, I've never really been that guy anyway. Even when I was single, like, I don't even have any really of those like stories. I wish I did, because that would have been cool. But I was the guy, honestly, like, because I was so young too.
14.
When I was doing, yeah. But by the time I was like on tour and opening, I was like 19, 20. And I was so focused on like getting advice from headliners. Like, that's who I was. If anybody thought I was trying to fuck them, it would have been a headliner, because I was like asking questions and like, can I come to your room? Can we hang out? You know, but I wanted to pick their brain and like understand why are you on last and I'm on here? What does it take for me to, like, my biggest question always was, what is the difference between me and the headliner, mm-hmm. and how do I move up and how do I get to close a show and stuff like that? So yeah, the road sex was always just myself late at night.
We just got a text message on our WhatsApp number, 437-375-2000. It says, "Hey, Jeff, I'm in a band. The question I hate the most, what advice do you have for young people in your field?" Do you get that one?
You know, I do get that a lot, but I don't mind it, actually.
Okay.
I kind of like it. And I think one of the reasons I like it is I was a very young person in this field, mm-hmm. and I truly had no idea what to do. And there was a lot of times I asked the wrong guy the wrong question, and, you know, they just didn't want to share advice. There's a lot of, like, especially in Canada, there was a lot of, you know, people didn't want to lose their spot. They didn't want you to pass them. So they didn't want to pass down some information there. So I totally understand why somebody would, because it's hard to give advice without really knowing them, but I don't mind that. And I always like to give advice whenever I can.
Did somebody actually give you, like, some bullshit advice one time that just turned out to be, like, the biggest line ever, looking back on you're like, I can't believe that son of a bitch actually tried to tell me to do that.
Listen, kid, racist jokes. That's the way.
Right?
You're working the Apollo? I got a great one.
You know, like, I won't mention a name, but, like, and I don't think you're doing this, but you are kind of doing an impression of a person I'm thinking of that would say something like that.
I love it.
They might be kidding, but they might also try to give you that advice. But yeah, I don't even know if it was advice or more of a threat. But I got some sort of bad advice from a comedy club owner a while ago that was like, it made sense at the, like, I could make sense of it at the time because of who he was and what, you know, his ownership of the club. But, like, later on thinking about it, I was like, wow, if I took that advice, I don't know what would have happened, you know? So, yeah.
I love, the stuff. Yeah. Fair. I love the stuff you do on stage. When you post stuff online, and you're doing that crowd work, I'm like, holy shit, he's so quick. He's so polished.
That was the advice. Stop doing that and don't do it.
Oh, fuck that guy.
See what I mean? That was the advice.
No, because
that's so hilarious that was. We didn't plan that.
No.
Right? Like, obviously, we didn't plan that. No. But that was so crazy that was your very next thing you just said. No, I know.
No,
we should fix that, man. Let's be friends.
Yeah, totally.
That's what I'm really here
all right.
for.
let's go for beers.
yeah, let's do it.
If Daniel was here, he would make his analogy that he often likes to make, being a hip hop artist. He talks about how improv in comedy is like freestyle rap. You got to be quick and you got to go off the top of the head. And I 100% agree with that analogy. How do you flex that muscle? How do you build that muscle? Because you're at a point now where you're so quick. And I kind of feel like you either have that or you don't. Like, Tid is one of the fastest motherfuckers I've ever met in my life. He can drop a one-liner out of nowhere. And I'm like, where did that come from? And he's just always been that way. 25 years I've known this son of a bitch. What about you? Was it always a natural thing, or is it something you build? And if so, how the fuck do you do that?
Great question. And it started really when I was a kid. Like, my family was a family of ball busters. Nobody would have called it that, but, you know, if you did something dumb, like, there was comments about it, and then there would be jokes, but it was all in fun. And, you know, it wasn't like, you're a piece of shit. It was, you know, playfully, you know, whatever you did. And everybody was quick, and you had to be. So, like, you know, you just had to be kind of on. So I think that's where that started, was that's like sort of a reflex of you always go for the funny, and it's always something funny. It was never harsh or negative, or, you know, it was always humor. And so, but where I developed, like how that came into play in stand-up was I had to learn, like the first probably 10 years mm-hmm. of doing stand-up was learning how to do it, how to write a joke, prep, you know, come up with a premise, where's the punchline, how to form, like how to build a set, how to end properly, where to start, how to get their attention, how to, you know, make a crowd like you, how to get them on your side, like all that kind of stuff. And then it was, I worked in, when I was 18, I got a job working for a murder mystery company. Mm. And so we would go in as characters, and you would sit at someone's table, improvise as the character, get up, do a scene, and sit back down. And it allowed me to improvise as a character, which I always kind of made myself, but with whatever accent the character had.
Right.
And so it was always really like they'd ask a question and I'd try to turn that into a joke. And I brought that into stand-up and started like taking what I had learned from stand-up, how to write and craft a joke, and seeing how quickly I could do it, and then could I tag it with something else later? Can I do a callback to it? And then how can I build a whole show in the moment? And not only are you watching the show, but you're like watching the creation of the show. That was my idea, to take it and like show, you know, kind of do that right in front of them. And then it was tons of trial and error from there. It was, you know, that what you're seeing now is the sort of not culmination, but is the result of years of failing at it miserably.
So it's the equation is formula plus reps equals funny.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. I never thought about it like that, but yeah.
When you were doing this murder mystery thing, Jeffrey.
yeah.
Was this more of a whose line is it anyways kind of improv? Is this like full on acting with accents and props and
yeah. Yeah. It's so if I was say I was a British guy, right? One of the characters was a British guy who owned a racetrack, and all of the people are there at this race, and I own the racetrack. And then there's a jockey and the wife and the guy, like the rich guy who bets on all the horses. And then everyone else is yourself, but you're a character. So I would sit down at your table. You guys are you. And I would sit down at your table and I go, hello, I'm Reginald. How are you? And you would talk to me as if I was Reginald the entire night. And I might die. Like I might be at your table and then the lights go out and I'm dead and now you got to figure it out.
Right.
But usually I was the guy leading the investigation,
right,
which also is a lot of like, what do you think happened, Carl? And this guy named Harvey was this old guy. He was like in his 60s when I started there. Funniest guy I ever met. And he never knew his lines, but he could always go, do you know what I mean, John? And as soon as he said John, the audience popped because they're so impressed he remembered his name was John.
Right, right, right.
And I was like, man, that's so hilarious because he doesn't know what he's supposed to say right now. And whatever he was going to say wouldn't have popped them like John popped them and the audience. And so I took that into stand-up. And that's why names are very important to me. And I can come back to people. And, you know, if somebody does something related to what they did, it's like, hey, John, have you ever thought about having this person as a client of yours since you do this? And like, you know, trying to join them together. And that was really from Harvey.
I'm really hoping that the guy leading the investigation at the murder mystery gets a better payoff than the guy playing the corpse, because otherwise those murder mystery guys really need a better union.
Well, hold on. Does the guy playing the corpse just have to lay there the entire fucking time?
Yeah.
Yeah. They got more actually, because you would have to sit.
That's a rib.
It was brutal. If you, because you're on a floor, you die how you die. Right. And sometimes it's very important. Because you might have to point and that's a clue. So you literally have to lay there. And sometimes they haven't served dessert yet. So you got to lay there while they eat dessert and then do three more scenes. Guess why you're fucking dead, who the killer is. You might be on the ground for like an hour and a half.
Laying there like John Travolta, Saturday Night fucking Fever. You're on napping. The fucking floor.
Yeah. There was two scripts where they can take you out of the room. And so you just sit in another room and have dinner. There's two of those. And that the leader of the investigation, I think, got more on those. But if you had to lay there, or there's one, you're in a chair and you have to be, it's the way you die. Your hands have to be down or something. You're in a chair like this for 2 hours. Like your shoulders are just like going crazy. Oh, it was brutal. Oh, it was brutal. Yeah. Nobody wanted to die. I mean, obviously, but you did have to learn less lines. So that was a positive, I guess.
I have often felt that one of the shittiest, although most lucrative gigs in comedy is when you do a corporate spot.
Oh.
And yeah, you're good at these. You're really good at corporate shit. And I always think it's a tough haul. I talked in the first half of the program today about a corporate event that I attended this week, and we had an amazing keynote speaker. The MC for the event was Canadian comedian Jessica Holmes. And she was great. She was really funny, but it's a tough room, man. You're talking to 500 HR professionals. It's a tough fucking room, you know?
Yeah.
And she got a little tiny bit edgy on a couple jokes, and people are like, do we laugh? I don't know. Yeah. And you're great at these. And I remember last year sometime, I called Tid on the phone. I said, hey, you know, at the corporate job, they asked me if I would be the comedian / MC for this event that we're holding. I'm like, I'm not a stand-up. I don't know how to do that shit. And I sure as hell don't know how to be clean. So I said,
funny.
I said, do you think if I called Leeson, he might help me figure out some safe material? And he's like, maybe. And then I never ended up bugging you because the thing got canceled because there was another shutdown, right?
Oh, right.
So they said, fuck it, it's out the window. And I'm like secretly thrilled that I'm off the hook because, you know, everyone was expecting the Office Funny Guy to bring the fire, and I'm dreading this shit. Do you have a corporate gig story that stands out in your mind where you're like, it either killed or it was worse than death?
Yeah, I mean, I have equal of both. The key really in the corporate world is all about the boss.
Right.
If the boss, that's right. If the boss is one of those bosses where you get there and they come up to you and they've got a glass of whiskey and their shirt is open and their jacket's off and the tie is gone and their hair's a little rustled and they come up to you like, hey, but like that. That's going to probably be a really fun show because that boss doesn't give a fuck. I've had a few bosses.
And you're giving the audience permission, right?
Absolutely. That's all they care. The HR person only cares about what the boss thinks. And also, like, you know, I stay away from any of the like controversial stuff where an HR person would be like, what? This is a nightmare. But it's really all about the boss. So like, I know exactly where the boss is, or if there's a group of bosses, I know exactly where they are. And I'll throw a couple of things out off the hop that's just like about the room or the situation. And then I just pay attention to what they laughed at or didn't laugh at. And I try to go in that direction. And sometimes it works great and they're really fun. And sometimes they are not. And everybody is looking at them. But the worst one I've ever had is this big, it was at an arena in a very small town. I don't even remember which town, but it's around here somewhere, very, very small town. And all they have is an arena and a local hockey team. And they rented out a banquet center that was in the arena. Mm-hmm. And it was this big corporate event, right? And they go through this whole thing, and the crowd is good. They're laughing at stupid jokes that they're telling, and they're laughing already. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be so easy if they're laughing at this shit. Like, this is going to be so much fun. Then the last thing they do is they go, all right, and now we're going to do the raffle draw. If you look under your seats, some of you have won prizes that you can claim out there, and some of you have not won prizes. If you get a red thing, you won, and if you get nothing, you didn't. And everybody stands up and looks, and you see people like, yeah, and you see other people like, fuck, not again. And then they go, they give people 2 minutes to look. And they think people are going to look and sit down. Then they go, and now we would like to welcome our comedian,
Jeff Lesson.
Jason, because I had taken the gig over from somebody else who was sick. And they're like, Jason, Jack. While they're saying this, everybody who won is leaving the room, and everyone who lost is going to the committee. And like, what the fuck? How do you not? It's Christmas. How do you not have presents for everybody? How do we not win? And I have to go up, and there's absolutely nothing. I mean, nobody cares. They're either collecting a prize or upset they didn't win. I was talking to nobody but a wall. I just stared straight, and like, I don't even remember what I said. I just was the whole time thinking, I have to get the fuck out of here. And it never stopped. It never stopped. There was like 900 people there. It was several businesses that all, you know, it was for their town. So it was like 400 people lined up, 400 people came back, 400 people lined up, 400 people, 100 people over there fucking complaining about not winning. Absolutely brutal. Nothing you could do.
To your
point. Oh, and the mic didn't work. And the fucking mic didn't work. I forgot about that part. So not only is there, I can't even yell. I can't even yell and go like, hello. It was absolutely horrible, brutal.
To your point about working a corporate gig, make sure you get the boss on your side. There was a guy at an event I attended before the pandemic started. I cannot remember the comic's name, and I feel terrible for not remembering his name. But he's got the boss on stage with him. He's the chief human resources officer, the CHRO. So he kept calling him the churro.
Oh, nice. Was he okay with that?
He giggled about it, so everyone got on board. And then it's like, now he's got everybody in the palm of his hand. And every time he lost them, he went right back to the churro. And I'm like, this guy.
But there's safe stuff. Yeah, that's safe.
It's safe. You know what I mean? But here's
it wasn't like something that Chris Rock said. You know what I mean? It
was safe. And see, that was you're beautifully segueing into what I was gonna ask about is
what I do.
Comedy has become he's good at the fucking one-liners and the segues. That's about it. When he was younger, he could lay some pipe. That's gone now too. I think that comedy has become really sanitized. You know, everyone feels like you got to be PC. You don't want to get canceled. Don't say the wrong shit. So when you do a corporate gig, you're sanitizing the sanitized. And I've always felt like comedy should be okay to be dangerous. Comedy should be okay to push envelopes, to break fucking rules, to poke fun at ourselves. How much of that are you seeing change over the last few years? Because we joke all the time, Tid and I do, about like we used to host a show together 10 years ago, and the shit we would say then that would make our audience fucking pop. If we said it today, like there would be a lynch mob coming after us, right? So
of course.
How much do you feel that pressure to really sanitize?
So for me personally, I don't really feel it that much because and that's just for me personally, just because I'm not really talking about the issues and the topics that seem to trigger people.
Okay.
I don't go into politics and religion and sexual orientation and all that kind of stuff. Mine is really about creating in the moment, having fun with people. But there are times where when in doing that, somebody thinks or takes it, you know, maybe the wrong way or something like that. So there has been certainly an increase in sensitivity, I think, across everybody, like everybody's extra sense. They're almost like, What are you asking me right now? What question do you want to know? Why are you at, you know, there is a little bit of that, but I try to stay away from those people. But the other thing I was going to say about what you were saying about the corporate thing is essentially they are sanitized. Like they are telling you like, this has to be the sanitized of the sanitized,
right?
But they're also paying you to do that. So it's like they're paying you extra to do that. And that's what I, what bothers me sometimes about some comics is like, they paid you a lot of money and you went to the corporate gig and they wouldn't let you say, I fucked her in the pussy or something like that. And they're like, ah, they wouldn't even let me say how I fucked my girlfriend last night. And you're like, no, they paid you just not to say that this time. That, right. Nobody's telling you, you can't say that, you know, on a late night show at the comedy club. If you want to, even an 8 o'clock show to the right crowd, it's just at a certain corporate gig in front of the employees, HR, the people who are, you know, their friends and family and stuff. They're just asking you, they're actually paying you to not do it. So, you know, the corporate stuff can be very, very tough in that sense. But when you're being paid that much, you've got to really be on top of that.
We just got another text message. I want to read this one out. This is from Rachel in Newfoundland. It says, I am absolutely loving this interview. Jeff is super informative and entertaining. I want to know, though, as a fairly new listener to this program, Donnie, you mentioned that Tid is the king of one-liners. What is one moment that stands out in your mind where he just absolutely mystified you with his quickness?
Wow, what a fucking question.
I know.
Mystified.
Honestly,
Tid says, were you mystified?
Wasn't my wife.
Tid says so much shit, I can't even keep track of it. The one thing that pops in my head isn't something that happened on air. And Tid may not even remember this bit that he did impromptu. This was at my last birthday. We went out for dinner at a Brazilian steakhouse. And there's like, what, Tid? 12, 14 of us around the table, something like that. So we're at a real long table and we're just sitting there eating. And a friend of ours, a mutual friend of Tid and I, he's there with his fiance. And I don't know, we got into the topic like people do, right? You get into the topic of like, what are you watching on TV and shit like that. And someone said, oh, I just started watching Breaking Bad again. And she pops in and goes, I've never watched that show. And I'm mortified. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? You never watch Breaking Bad. And she's like, well, I've seen so much online and I get it. They make drugs. They do this. They do that. She's like, I feel like I know how it ends. So why do I need to see it? And without missing a beat, Tid goes, I know how porn ends.
I mean, it's true. Still going to watch it.
Fucking great. I spit out my fucking brown sugar roasted pineapple.
That's called science.
That's fucking great.
What a great fucking high spot on the night.
Yeah, so good. So good.
So, Jeff, man, like,
I feel like I know how to, that would bother me too. I feel like I know how it ends.
Right.
You feel like you do.
What is that?
Have you seen a clip or something? Or do you just have a fucking feeling? What the fuck is wrong with you?
It's one of the greatest TV shows of all time.
It's about drugs. I feel like I know how it ends. It ends with somebody dying from drugs or something, right? I got it. That old tidbit.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, whatever. All right, so I've seen it.
What the fuck is Jeff Leeson watching on TV?
well, I feel like I should watch Breaking Bad now. I have seen only a few things, so I feel like I gotta get into that. I don't feel like I know how it ends, and that's gonna bother me for a long time. I feel like I don't even know how it begins, really. My buddy, I used to go to his house. He was really into it. And so when I would go there, he'd be watching it. So I would like watch episodes that he was watching. But I mean, unless you've seen.
So you're not doing a bit right now. You've never watched the show. Holy shit.
No. Well, that's not true. I've watched the show, but not the full show start to finish.
Jeff, yeah. I was ready to call you my new best friend. And now I don't know if that's going to be cool or not, man.
You know what, Donnie? I feel like I know how it ends, though. So like, I just. So I got this feeling. It's fine. Yeah. I feel like I know how it began. And I know the guy from Malcolm in the Middle is in it.
Right.
And I know how it ends. So, I mean, do I really need to watch it? I don't think so.
Maybe not. So what the hell are you watching these days, dude?
Mostly porn.
Yeah, good. Nice.
Yeah.
Do you make it to the end?
Never.
No. That's a fun game. No. That's a fun game.
I don't know how porn ends. I have no idea.
Well, you do. It just takes me. It takes me a month and a half to watch it.
Yeah. No, I'm never watching the same thing twice either. I like. Hold on. You know,
Tid, go back and finish the clip.
Well, you just put it on pause,
and then you come back a day or two later and pick up where you left off.
Do you really?
Who
back
does
in the
that?
Day when you have DVDs, man?
Okay, but I'm talking today, man. You're on the hub.
Oh, no.
No.
If
no,
you're on the hub, are you going back? You bookmarking? What are you doing?
No, not at all. There's no bookmarking. Not nowadays.
I don't know what
nowadays
you...
it's just no, nowadays your phone just has the algorithm.
Yeah, it just knows it just the pulls, stupid
it pulls
shit
up
like.
Exactly. Yeah. It pulls up exactly what you're looking for.
It's like, I love machine learning. It gives me all the dirty crap I love.
I just leave it up to science.
I will throw out one television recommendation, a show that I binged over the last week and a bit. Craig Robinson, who I think is fucking hilarious, right?
Yes.
People remember him from The Office and a whole bunch of other things that he's done. He's got a new show called Killing It. This show is fucking great. It's so funny. It is so funny. He is a broke ass motherfucker living in the Florida Everglades, and he decides he's going to pick up a part-time job killing snakes because there's an overpopulation of snakes.
Oh, wow.
And the person who kills the most snakes in this town over a certain period of time makes like a shit ton of money. And they come across all these interesting people, crazy characters. It is a really, really funny show. I haven't heard another person talking about this show.
It would have to be really funny because the premise you just gave is not selling to anybody at the studio.
It's so good. It's so good.
You know what show I've really enjoyed? It's like a weekly thing, is on HBO. It's that Winning. It's called like Winning Time, and it's the story of the LA Lakers Magic Johnson era. But it's not a documentary. It's like a show. But John C. Reilly is in it, and it's really
playing Magic Johnson, of course.
Of course, yeah, absolutely, perfectly cast. You know, perfectly
guys,
cast.
Guys, it's Winning Time.
Yeah, now. I may point out, I also know how that one ends because they win a shitload of championships.
What?
But I am still going to enjoy the rest of the show. So,
I love that. I have not seen that. I'm a huge sports fan, huge basketball fan. I got to check that out.
Oh, it's an interesting show. The way they do it, too, because it's a comedy, but it's also it's serious, but it's also a comedy. And the way they do it and edit it and stuff like that, it's really interesting. And I didn't know, honestly, but like I watched the first episode and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. And by episode three, I was like, oh, I gotta watch every episode. So it's really well done. And a fascinating story. I had no idea of a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that's going on.
I love it. Jeff, where can people find you? Got gigs coming up. Where can they find you online if they want to learn more?
Yeah, all the tour dates are at jeffleesoncomedy.com. And we're doing a big tour. Well, not a big tour, but a theater tour in May of Ontario. So we're doing.
Don't downplay it. It's a big fucking tour.
No, I don't. I mean, like, it's not a lot of dates. It's big venues. But yeah, it'll be Wallaceburg May 6th, Ridgeway May 7th, Sarnia May 13th, Chatham, May 14th, and Fergus, May 27th. And then Mount Clemens, Michigan at the Emerald Theater on May 28th, which I really hope can do well because it's a beautiful place and I would love to do well there, hopefully.
I am going to do my best to make it out to one of those small town shows.
Oh, please do.
I want to come
Fergus
on out.
Fergus is close, Donnie.
I'm going to, no, it ain't.
Where do you live, Donnie? Where do you live?
North Toronto.
Near Gravenhurst or at all?
No, near Markham.
Oh, that area. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that area.
Yeah. I don't think we have anything up in that region. Gravenhurst is maybe
people don't like comedy up there.
I'll make the trip.
No, they wouldn't book. They wouldn't do it. We tried. We tried to go to Markham, Newmarket, and we've been denied. Even Keswick.
I will tell you this: friend of the show, Dave Curran. I believe if he hasn't already done it, he's doing it in the next week or two. Is opening the first comedy club in York Region, just north of Toronto.
Really?
It's called Jokers. It's in the East Beaver Creek area. It's the first comedy club in York Region, and he's planning, like, you know, star-studded comics coming in and performing. And we got to get you booked there first and foremost.
I would love to.
Yeah, that's a piece of cake to get to, but it is on my bucket list, my man. I want to do at least a 5-minute set once before I kick the bucket. I don't care if I fucking rot. I don't care if I bomb. In fact, I kind of hope I do, but I want to try it once. Just once.
Absolutely. As you should. I tell everyone that. I tell it, like, anyone that wants to get, that ever says that, I say you got to try it at least one time to see it, and you're going to want to do it again, honestly, bomb or succeed or, you know, whatever. You're going to want to do it again because it's an exhilarating, if it's something you've ever thought about, do it. It is the most exhilarating fucking thing you'll ever be. Are you a roller coaster guy at all?
No, because I'm 6'8". I don't fit on.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. Cocaine? You into cocaine at all?
He does do speedballs.
Yeah, there we go. Close enough.
The closest I've ever come to having a stand-up moment was when I was 18 years old. I went with a bunch of friends to a Yuck Yucks amateur night. It was like an open mic night.
Oh, yeah.
And we were assholes heckling the shit out of this guy on stage to the point where he broke and walked off stage.
Oh, no.
And the host looks at me because I'm the loudest in the group. And he goes, "Hey, funny guy, why don't you come up here and try it yourself if you think you're so good?" I'm like, "Okay." So I go up there like full of piss and vinegar, not knowing what the hell I'm going to do.
You did it?
And I have nothing, right? Yeah. I'm trying to tell like dad jokes that my old man used to tell me. I've got nothing. I'm getting no reaction.
Oh my God, my palms are sweaty just thinking about this. Yeah.
And then
I'm so nervous for you right now. Fuck.
This was my saving grace. This was my TID moment. This one attractive lady sitting near the front, she gets up and walks out while I'm in the middle of a setup. And I say, "Hey, where are you going?" And she's like, "I'm going to the bathroom." And I'm like, "Oh, okay. Is it number one or number two?" She's like, "None of your business." And I'm like, "Okay." And now the crowd has turned their focus to her. And I'm like, "I can work with this." So I'm dragging out the setup of this joke. She goes to the bathroom. She comes back quick. Like, you barely noticed she was gone. And I
it
said,
wasn't
and
shit.
And I stopped my setup and I said, "You're back?" And she's like, "Leave me alone." I'm like, "Hold on. Really? Who can go in and out of the bathroom that fast? What did you do?" And she's like, "I had to go pee. Leave me alone." I'm like, "Did you wash your hands? Because that was really quick." And the crowd's staring at her and she's turning bright red. And she goes, "Yes, I washed my hands." And I'm like, "What color was the soap?" She has no answer. And the crowd just turns on her. They're all laughing at her like, "You're dirty. You're filthy." And I'm like, "Thank you. That's my time." And I walked off the stage.
Wow. Did anyone say anything to you? The MC or a manager? Anybody?
The MC came up to me after the show and said, "I'm a piece of shit."
Really?
Yeah, he said, "You're not coming back next week." Yeah.
He told me I was a piece of shit.
Do you know who it was? Do you have any idea who the MC was? Do you know what year it was?
I mean, God, this has got it. We're talking like mid to late 90s, bro.
Oh, wow.
This is a lifetime.
That MC, do you ever remember seeing the MC like famous anywhere on TV or anything? Because that around that time, a lot of people would have gone on, you know, to like now they would be known if they were an MC then. Wow.
I know.
That's
it
so...
wasn't Russell Peters. It was that was my one moment, dude. And if I never do it again, I'll hold on to that. But I want to try to do an actual set. Just once.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, you got it. You got to give it a shot, man. If I can facilitate that in any way, I'm happy to do so, because it's like when you, it's I don't know. It's like nothing you've ever really experienced before, although you kind of have in that sense. But in that sense, that was really like you were thrown into it. Whereas this time you're going to have the buildup in your mind. You're going to know it's coming. You're going to be able to think about it and mull it over. And then like, it's like a roller coaster. You get to the top, and then as soon as they call your name and you grab that mic, it's such a fucking wild ride, man. It's a wild ride, and I hope you do it. And I would love to see that. Like, I film it, or if I can be there.
Well, you're going to have to see it because you're fucking writing it. So
I might be the wrong guy for that. But
as we say goodnight to Mr. Leeson, the last text message I'm going to read out that just came in, 437-375-2000. Guys, I'm a huge fan of this show. You've interviewed some unbelievable celebrities over the last couple of years. This is by far my favorite episode ever. Don't tell Danny O.
Yes. Sorry, Danny O, but I'm excited. That's awesome. Yes.
Awesome. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us, man. Let's do it again sometime soon. Let's not wait another couple years before your next visit on the program.
I would love to come back, guys. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm honored to be here on that person's favorite episode of your podcast. And I'm glad they listened, even though they probably know how it's going to end, which is I leave and you guys continue. So we appreciate you being here, that person.
And I'm going to say this, because at the end of every episode, Ted and I give our final thoughts. I'm going to throw this one out there, and I'm also going to point it back to Jeff as we say goodnight. I've talked about this a couple times over the last couple weeks, and if you follow me on socials, you know that I've been pumping this out pretty hard. I recently decided to make the very silly life choice to get back into the professional wrestling business. Saturday, May 7th, I'm running an event in Toronto on the Danforth. It's for a new company called OTT, Only the Toughest. The show is absolutely fucking stacked from start to finish. I've been running shows since the late 90s. I think this one has the potential to be the best show I've ever been a part of, and I'm not just saying that. And I ran shows with Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Scott Steiner, all on the same program. This one, I feel like from top to bottom, is going to be super entertaining. Main event, Harry, the Bulldog Smith, son of the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, against former WWE star of the Wyatt family, Eric Redbeard.
Oh, shit.
We've got two massive motherfuckers that are going to beat the piss out of each other on May 7th. Limited tickets still available. You can go to onlythetoughest.ca and pick up your seats. Jeff, I hope you can make it. Tid, what do you want to say before we say goodnight?
Go fuck yourself.
All right. On that note.
That's the best ending to ever any show I've ever heard. I did not know that was coming. I did not know how this was going to end. Go fuck yourself. Amazing.
That's Jeff. That's Tim. I'm Donnie. This is episode 96, and we are done this party. We'll see you next time.
Go fuck yourself.